Well, Carrie Newhoff is the author of Didn't See It Coming, Overcoming the 7 Greatest Challenges That No One Expects and Everyone Experiences. Carrie shines a light on the biggest threats to the life you really want to live and the keys to overcoming them in this new book. Didn't See It Coming reveals the 7 core issues that take people out. Take them out.
I'm sorry,
what?
I was taken out, so I was like grunting like you got thrown to the side, you know?
Cynicism. Uh-oh. I'm already out.
I was just going to say.
Compromise. Yeah. Disconnectedness. Living by myself with my dog at the cottage. Is that bad? And my banjo. Irrelevance. That's been forever. Pride. Yeah, whatever. Burnout. Too lazy for that, I think.
Yeah.
And the emptiness of success. Yep.
How about the emptiness of no success? Does that work too?
That's what I meant. Wait, I didn't mean I'm successful and therefore I... No,
oh,
I
so
meant
you
the
can't
other
even
way.
Experience that
no, I
because
haven't.
You don't have success. Yeah, I understand that. Me too.
Gotta screw up a bit. Discover how to reverse the most significant challenges to your life, closing the gap between who you are and who you've always longed to be. The website is didn'tseeitcomingbook.com. Just have like this cartoon image of someone whipping a book across the room. Carrie Newhoff is on the line with us. Carrie, you are, well, you're like a mega church pastor in Canada. How does that feel, having that moniker?
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm in Canada. That's true. And I love our church, so that'll work.
Carrie,
yeah,
I was...
We're growing again. It's crazy.
What's the... Kinexus, isn't that what it's called?
Yeah, Kinexus. We're in Barrie. We have 3 locations right now. Barrie, Midland, and Orillia. And a couple weeks ago, we had just shy of 2,000 people. So whatever that makes us, yeah, it's been great. God's been faithful.
Oh, stop. That means you're doing the whole, give all the credit goes to the Lord Jesus. You know, remember back in the 70s when you have Randy Stonehill and you applaud at the end of his concert and he'd just point up to the, don't applaud me, it's all for the Lord.
Or the touchdown
well,
people.
Well, there's a false modesty for sure. And I talk about that in the book, right? Like if people are like, oh, that wasn't a great sermon, that was God. It's like, well, actually, if that was God, it would have been a lot better than your sermon. Right? It would have been a lot better than your
nice.
Sermon. So... but you know what? I talk a lot about the struggles I've had in 23 years of leadership in the book.
Yeah, well, let's get right to that because that's all I wanted. I'm only interested in skid marks these days. So how have you messed up? Like what?
Well,
how are you a broken preacher?
Oh, yeah, you know, it is a story of grace because there's a lot of cracks. So what happened to me, it's been 23 years since I started in ministry, so it's a slow-growing large church. But I spent a decade just running really, really hard and completely burned out. Like, I started at 30 because I was a lawyer first, and then started in ministry at 30, and by the time I hit 40, I felt like my heart had died. And I was kind of, you know, on the one hand, we were on top of the world. I was part of a mainline denomination at the time, still in the same community. We sort of started over again as a non-denominational church 11 years ago as Kinexus. It's a whole other story for a whole other day. But we were the fastest growing and one of the largest churches in our denomination at the time. I had just spoken at North Point in front of 2,500 people, Andy Stanley sitting in the front row. And apparently they told me I crushed the talk. And I flew back to Canada, got off the plane at Pearson, and it's like I fell off a cliff. And everybody had told me all through my 30s I was going to burn out. And I'm like, nah, burnout's for wimps. You know, I don't burn out. And wow, it was crazy. That was 12 years ago? Yeah, 12 years ago. And it was just horrible. It was like I fell off a cliff. And, you know, you can cheat the laws of physics. You can cheat sleep. You can, you know, push your body really hard and your soul really hard for a long time. But if you're not fundamentally healthy, it eventually catches up with you. So I totally burned out 12 years ago.
Okay, what did that look like?
Well, for me, it was a loss of passion. I, you know, love Jesus, love the church, love my job and what I got to do, but there had been, you know, church leadership is not easy, life is not easy. We'd had some tension in our marriage, we had some issues in our church, and I didn't handle it particularly well. I wasn't grieving losses. I you know, I'm fine. Typical male response. How are things, Carrie? Everything's great. Even when they weren't, I wasn't processing stuff. Plus, I had pedal to the metal in terms of hours. You know, my response to rapid church growth was, I'll just work more hours. Well, that doesn't scale. You know, so all of that happened, and I just lost my energy. I lost my passion. I lost my enthusiasm. And I really, my productivity tanked. I'm a pretty driven person, and, like, to even return an email might take half an hour to write three lines. Like, it's like my whole life just ground to a halt. And you hear the stereotypes of people who can't get out of bed and all that. I was not that bad. I got out of bed every day, but I just, you know, whatever that mojo was that makes you who you are, it was gone.
Okay, I want to talk about this loss of passion, energy, and enthusiasm. I'm going to do what I do best. So I have the spiritual gift of being a jerk. And I want to just contrast your life with the guys working at DeFasco.
Yeah.
They're getting out of bed at 4:30 in the morning. They're showing up at 5:30. They're busting their butt all day long in intense heat, and they're doing this day in and day out and day in and day out. And you say to them, have you lost your passion at work? Have you, you know, do you have, where's your energy? Where's your enthusiasm? You should be cheerful because, you know, especially if Christian, you should be doing this as though you're doing it for the Lord and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Now, contrast those guys with guys like you and I who get to do what we want to do.
I know. It's not fair, is it?
No, and I'm, and like, that's what the part of me, I think now we're tapping into the guy mentality, the suck it up or, stop whinging, you little princess.
Yeah.
Because I love my job. I love doing what
right.
I do. Do I have moments where I don't have the passion or the energy? Of course I do. But then I think about the crap jobs I used to do. Like, I worked in a Glad garbage bag factory for four overnight midnight shifts, and I hated it so much I went and got a job at Weed Man. So let me push back a little bit with this, Carrie. Dude, you're doing a job you want to do. You're impacting people's lives. You're not really having to bust your hump here a whole lot doing something you hate. So why can't you just lean into the whole appreciate what you got, suck it up, move on, away we go? What's the danger? What am I missing here?
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying for sure. And, you know, I get that. My dad's a tool and mold maker. My grandfather was a janitor, and I spent a lot of time with him when I was a kid. One of the things I learned from my grandfather, because he came to Canada as an immigrant hoping that he would be able to own land. He couldn't own land in Holland just the way the family structure worked. He wasn't the one to get the farm, so he came over here, never actually realized his dream, and ended up working as sort of low man on the totem pole, menial labor in a greenhouse and driving truck and cleaning toilets. But I used to hang out with him when I was a kid, and you know what? I realized in that moment, he whistled, I don't know how, you know, I was a kid, I don't know how he stuffed his disappointment, but he was a pretty happy guy. And I thought, okay, there's dignity in every job. And I saw that in my dad too, you know, tool and mold maker, high school education. And so I think what hit me with burnout, because there's a lot, you know, there are people listening to the show right now who are off, who can't go to the steel mill, who can't go to whatever job they happen to hate because their brain doesn't work anymore, their heart doesn't work anymore, they don't have energy anymore. And I was right at the point where really my life ground to a halt, and I was having trouble getting motivated to do anything. And so I think burnout is a big issue today, no matter what you're doing. And, you know, I would hope that, and I think, you know, there's two kinds of burnouts, Drew. I think the one kind of burnout is what happened to me and what happens to other people where, and I didn't take time off work. I took 3 weeks off in the summer, which I was going to take off anyway. But I knew at that moment, elders to our church said, do you want a sabbatical? And I said, no, if I take a sabbatical, I know I'm never coming back. And
really?
I didn't think God was done with me,
right.
But I felt like I was done. So I'm like, no, if I go away for a month or 6 months or something like that, that's going to be a mistake. But there are lots of people who have to take time off work, and because I have the kind of job I do, you know, I had some grace to just cancel appointments and work on the weekend message, And I did, and I came back. I remember, you know, this started in May of 06. By August, I was preaching again. And I remember the elders came up and they said, man, that was, you crushed it. You just did a great job. I'm like, well, I'm glad it felt that way on the outside. I guess I got some muscle memory, but you should see how dead I feel on the inside still. And there are other people who just take time off work and, like, they don't come back, or they're off for a year. But so there's that kind of burnout where it really derails you. But there's another thing, and I don't have a name for it. I just call it low-grade burnout, where maybe you have half the symptoms of somebody who burns out. So you can function, but the joy of life is gone. And I think that is an epidemic today, that a lot of people were just inundated by information, we're on all the time, we're tired, nothing seems fun anymore, food doesn't even taste good, and we're just cynical and disillusioned and jaded. And, like, I'm not sure you have to live that way.
But it's, here we go. Yeah, see,
okay.
It's seasons.
Yeah.
You know, and I think whenever we're in a particularly funky season, a melancholy season, an autumn season, or even for a lot of people, we probably compare it mostly with winter, some long, drawn-out winter, cold, frigid, bleh, season, we think that then this is North Americanism, right? We go, oh, this is my life. This is who I... No, just wait. Just get, you know, my dad used to say the sun will, not, he didn't say the sun will come up tomorrow. My dad wasn't Annie. My dad would say, hey, tomorrow's a new day. Tomorrow's a new day. Have a sleep, and tomorrow's a new day. And it's amazing the difference just, you know, getting through the night kind of is. So I do think that as, especially North Americans, we think that whatever season we're in is going to be the season that we're in for the rest of our lives. So what's the secret to... to just, I don't know, is there anything wrong with holding your breath a little bit or just putting your nose down and working through it? I guess at some point you got to pull your head up and go, hold on, I've been stuck in this for X amount of time, and X amount of time is not good.
Yeah, and I think that's what happened to me, is I was in my 30s, I was running an unsustainable pace, an unhealthy pace, definitely a workaholic. I'm a recovering workaholic now. Where it was just lots and lots of hours, and it's not good. And so, you know, I think you're right. You have to, and eventually, it got pretty dark for me. I think if I went to see my doctor, I probably should have gone to see my doctor. I went to a counselor instead, but if I went to my doctor, he probably would have diagnosed me with clinical depression for a season, and I'm not somebody who struggles with depression, but that summer, I probably would have fit all the criteria. And then one day I just had this moment in the fall of 06 where I thought, wait a minute, Carrie, this is like all in your head, exactly what you're saying. I have a great wife who loves me. I have kids who love me. I've got a great church. I've got elders and a team who's supporting me. Like, there's actually nothing wrong. Like, there's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah.
This is all in your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was the beginning of the turnaround. And I got maybe 70, 80% of my energy mojo back within those first 6 months to a year. But and when you're not feeling good, and anybody who's in that space right now who's listening who's not feeling good, there is an unbelievable drive to get back to normal.
Hmm.
You just like, can I just wake up tomorrow and it can just be normal again? I just want it to be normal. And I had the presence of mind to realize, oh, wait a minute, I don't want to go back to normal because normal got me here. All right, if I go back to normal, there's something wrong with my patterns. There's something wrong with the way I'm living and leading.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to bring me back to that place of despair again. And so I worked really hard over a couple of years. I hired leadership coaches, went to more counseling, spent a lot of time reflecting. It's like, how do I find a new normal? So 12 years on the other side of that, it's a lot better. A lot better. And you're right. Some days you have days where you're like, I don't like my job. It's like, get your thumb out of your mouth. I mean, people have way worse lives than you do, Newhoff. You have absolutely nothing to complain about. So I think you're right. But for those seasons, which really kind of feel like it's out of your control, that this is something that happened to you,
yeah.
Secret for me in the last 12 years has been, if there's a line, and I write about this in the book, it's like, I got to live today in a way that will help me thrive tomorrow, that my patterns of rest, nutrition, exercise, spiritual disciplines, sleep, work, life have to work in a way that will help me thrive tomorrow. And I wasn't taking care of myself particularly well. I wasn't exercising. I was 20 pounds heavier than I am now. I wasn't sleeping much. Like, those things just, you know, the rules apply to you. You think they don't, and then all of a sudden they do.
On the line with Kerry Newhoff. He is the author of Didn't See It Coming, Overcoming the 7 Greatest Challenges That No One Expects and Everyone Experiences. I want to just go through these kind of quickly here,
sure.
And I'd like to avoid one of them, if you don't mind.
Is it cynicism by any chance, Drew? Is it that one?
Is it what?
It's not that one, cynicism. No, it's a different one on the list.
All I know is part of it rhymes with something I struggle with. Sin.
Oh.
Emptiness of success. Dude, I have not tasted that. I said it wrong earlier in your intro, but I've heard that time and time again. I used to hang around Teen Ranch a lot, so we had a lot of pro athletes come through, and you hear that again and again and again from all the, you know, the old NHL guys like Paul Henderson and Mike Gardner and Ronnie Ellis and Daryl Sittler. You know, the success, especially Henny, I mean, he's big on that. You know, scores the winning goal, 72 against the Russians. He's got his stinking head on a stamp these days, so he was the toast of Canada.
Yeah.
And it really did leave him empty. So I'm not sure we need to labor on that one. Burnout, okay, we get that one. Pride, ego, totally get that one. Irrelevance, again, I wonder about that tying in more with the North American mentality. I can't see someone wandering around the desert in Sudan going, am I relevant?
That's a good point. I didn't write it, actually, for the people wandering around Sudan. But that's a really good point. It probably doesn't work there.
No. I just think that, like, I'm a little down on how sucky we all are. We're all a product of our own culture, and I think we're discontent. And there's a reason we're discontent, because we are filling our lives with junk food for the soul. You put whatever it is in there, but it's junk food for the soul. Compromise, dude, when you know you're doing something that goes against your code, it's hard to lay your head on the pillow and fall asleep and have a good sleep. So we get that. So let's just hunker down into cynicism just for a stinking second. Is it not a spiritual gift?
That is awesome. Sure, Drew. It's a spiritual gift.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, that's a tough one for me. I'm an optimist by nature.
I really am.
I know, thank you. You're a realist or a pessimist? What would you say?
I would choose a different word, but we can't use it on air.
No, that's Tim. No, I don't know. I think it depends on the day. I vacillate between those two.
Right. Realists are just, that's the socially acceptable form of pessimism.
Yes.
You can say that at parties and people don't kick you out.
No.
Like, I'm a realist. Yeah. Like, okay. Nobody likes pessimists, but you don't like optimists. So there you are. So, you know, with that, what was really surprising to me, I spent a year working in law in downtown Toronto. So I'm pretty optimistic, idealistic. I knew I was called into ministry, so I was going to just finish law and then go into seminary. But I was surrounded by lawyers, and these are some of the best in the country, right? You're right downtown in Toronto. It doesn't get much bigger than that. These guys are making stinking amounts of money in the year, in the course of a year. Like, I think at that time, a good lawyer was making somewhere between a half and $750,000 a year in Toronto. So I was in the 90s. So it was crazy. They were making a stinking amount of money. And I remember there was one day, one of the lawyers came into the firm. I'm the student, low guy on the totem pole, sitting there behind my desk. He waves a lottery ticket in my face. And he goes, if I win this thing, you'll never see my face again. The thing is, he owned the firm. Like, could you imagine, like, a pastor going into a church, waving a lottery ticket? It's like, if I win this thing, someone else is doing part two of the series next week.
Yep.
It's going to be me.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Like, that is cynical. And they had the house. They had the horse farm up in King Township. They were driving Lexuses. I mean, they had everything. And I thought, wow. And what shocked me is I didn't grow cynical in law. I wasn't in it very long. It was ministry that kicked the snot out of me. And our churches, when I first started, were really small. There was this couple that came in. You know, when your church has 6 people in it, you're just happy that anybody comes in. And I was pretty. These people, you could tell, they life was not kind to them. They had really struggled. And I thought, great, we get to be the church. Like, isn't this what the church is about?
Yeah.
It's not just for the rich and powerful. It's for everybody. And we didn't have a lot of money as a church, but we pooled our money together, and we'd buy them groceries, and we'd fill their car with gas. And I think there was one month in the winter once when they couldn't pay their heat bill, so we paid it. And we were kind of the church. And I went to their house. I did visitation in those days because the churches were so small. I was at their house more than anybody's house. And about 4 years into my ministry, we were doing some church event, and the guy, I'll call him Roger, he got up in the middle of the event, he took his wife's hand, took his grandkid's hand, announced in front of everybody, there's like 100 people in the room, "You don't care about us anymore, we're leaving this church, we're finished." Stormed out. I'm like, dumb, I chase him, right? I'm like, "No, don't go, don't go." Walk out to the parking lot with him. I'm like, "What do you mean? Like, what's going on?" He goes, "You don't care about us anymore." I'm like, "Yeah, we absolutely care about you. No, it's not like it used to be. You don't care about us anymore." And you shouldn't argue, but I argued, and I just said, "Look, with all due respect, Roger, I don't think there is a single family that I have spent more time with in the last 5 years than I've spent with you. And I don't think there's anybody that we've given, like, we kind of helped out more than we've helped you guys out. Like, I don't know how you can say that." Mm. And he got into the car, slammed the door, drove away. No happy ending. Never got fixed.
And you never saw him again?
Never saw him again. No, this isn't Hollywood. There's no happy ending. And something died in me that day. And, you know, it wasn't just him. It was like, that happens a few times.
Yeah.
And people walk out the door, and we had some friendships kind of collapse, you know. And I went to people who knew the situation, and I said, "Okay, what part of the slice of the pie do I own? This can't be 100% them."
Sure, as much as it depends on you, be at peace with everybody.
Exactly. And you know what my wise counselor said, the people I asked about it? "No, actually, we think it's them. We don't think you did anything." It's like, well, why did these friendships die?
Yeah.
Like, come on. So I felt my heart, like the optimist became a cynic. And you know what happens when you get your heart broken enough is...
You start writing country music?
That's a good thing. Yeah, absolutely. you do that. You start projecting past failures onto future situations. So the next time a couple walks in who reminds me of Roger and Mary, I'm like, "Oh, I know how this ends." Right? And after I burned out, I'm like, "Okay, I don't want to live this way anymore. I miss the old Carrie."
Yeah.
But that's really, you see, cynicism, here's a question to ask. This would be fascinating because I've asked a few friends since the book came out. What is the reward you get for becoming cynical and staying cynical? What's the reward? Because it has to...
What's the payback,
Yeah, what's the payback? There has to be a reward for you.
Well, there's a protectionism to it, I think, right? So you get to stand back and feed a little bit of your pride to say, that didn't happen to me at least, or I didn't get sucked into that, or I wasn't disappointed.
Yep, bingo. Or I told you so.
Yeah.
Told you you guys were going to break up. Told you it wasn't going to work out. Told you he'd go bankrupt, right?
And being right is the payoff.
Yeah, and I looked at that and I thought, is that really who I want to be? But it's really hard because I think you're exactly right. The payoff in cynicism is I don't have to engage my heart because I know where this is going anyway. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, coming out of burnout, I'm like, okay, God, I've got to take my heart out of the concrete shell and put it back out there again. I went through a year after we had those friendships collapse during my burnout where I said to my wife, you know what? I'm done with people. Like, we're not making friends anymore. And, you know, I'm in ministry, but I'm just done with the people part. So, of course, it's kind of stupid. But, you know, when you're burned out, you're not thinking straight. And that lasted about a year, and then I'm like, this is dumb. I need friends. I need people in my life, but that makes you vulnerable. It means if I'm going to trust you, you could break my heart. And of course, what you realize is, 90% of the people are just like you. They're trying to find their way in the world. They're not going to break your heart. And for the 10% who do, well, thank goodness for Henry Cloud and John Townsend. You can read their books and know how to deal with them. So I feel like you can, you know, the cure for cynicism, I think, is to hope again and trust again and believe again, but it's hard.
Yeah. Dude, I'm trying to think of the first time you and I connected. Was that when we did, like, what the heck was it, when we had pastors and authors on the show or something? Or what
I think it was. I wrote a book a few years ago on parenting, and I know we did an interview on that.
Yeah.
That was a good interview. You asked great questions.
Oh, stop. Don't. Yeah. Stop.
See, there you are. Your cynic is kicking in going, he's just flattering me.
It so is. Just get out of my head. Listen, I don't want to like you. But, well, because I don't get a lot, I don't interview or I don't invite a lot of pastors on the show. And I especially don't invite pastors who write books because I find most of them it's just copying and pasting their messages instead of writing a real book.
Oh.
But you, I don't know, man. There's something about you. I'm trying to be mushy without being awkward, and I think I'm failing.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, you know, it takes a lot to say. You know what I think my next book, I got to run it by my agent and the publisher.
Yeah.
But I think the cynicism chapter, Drew, has just exploded. Like, everybody is like, oh, my gosh. So I'm preaching. It's funny because you're right. That is the formula for a pastor book. It's like, here, let's hire a ghostwriter, take that last series, and voila, a book, right?
Yep.
So I actually wrote this from scratch last summer. Now, I mean, I've blogged for years and the whole deal, so it's not like I hadn't ever crafted these thoughts, but I really wrote the book from scratch. And so I'm preaching it right now, like we're doing part four or whatever tomorrow at Kinexus at our church. I'm talking about emptiness. But when I did, I kicked off with cynicism. Here's what threw me for a loop. Number one, I didn't even think about this when I wrote the book or when it was released, but I thought cynicism was a male issue. There was just this filter that said, oh, guys are cynical, women are not. You would not believe the number of women who have reached out and went, uh-oh.
Really?
Yeah, I know. That shocked me. I'm like, no, you guys are hopeful. Like, we're the hopeless lot. we're the people who don't get it. Women are cynical. And I've had so many pastors who, and that's the whole idea of the book. I didn't see it coming. They're like, oh, my gosh, I read that section of the book. I have this little cynicism test on my website. And they're like, I'm screwed. Like,
dude, hold on. You have a cynicism test on your website?
I do, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm so going there. I want to see if I can get the lowest score. I mean, highest score.
Break the website.
Yeah.
Be careful, Drew. If you go to didn'tseeitcomingbook.com, scroll halfway down, you'll see there's a burnout test for free and a cynicism test. Now, I'm not a doctor. Do not play one on the internet, so they're not, like, scientific.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Okay.
You know, they're casual quizzes. And honestly, on burnout, I mean, if you're scoring 10 for 10 or 11 for 11, whatever it is, it's like, please go see your doctor immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
All right, man. Well, Kerry Newhoff, he's the author of Didn't See It Coming, Overcoming the 7 Greatest Challenges That No One Expects and Everyone Experiences. Kerry, first of all, the website is didn'tseeitcomingbook.com, didn'tseeitcomingbook.com.